right, we are back. I'm Janine. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and standing by to join me in the second half of the show is Fritz Coleman. He's standing by now. Good morning, Fritz.
Good morning, Janine. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy to hear what you're doing. This is a wonderful residency that you have coming up. Well, actually, it just started on the 26th of January, right?
Yes. Well, we've been doing a residency at the El Portal Theater, this iconic theater in North Hollywood, for over a year. We've been there every month, once a month, with sold-out shows, and we're going to continue in perpetuity. But last weekend, the 26th, we did a fundraiser for the fire victims. This is a small theater. I'm in the small portion of this larger theater. But we've decided to donate 100% of the profits from that show to the Wildfire Recovery Fund, which is part of the California Community Foundation. They're very reputable.
Okay.
Mayor Bass recommended it. Other nonprofits have recommended that we use it. And the response was so good that we sold out last weekend. We opened it up to the February 23rd date, which is already sold out.
It's great.
So we've decided to do the March date, which is March 30th as well. So again, 100% of the profits. And this will go to people that need help finding permanent or temporary housing.
Okay.
It helps them with mental health services, with medical services. It's people that will do casework to sort of help you through the process. So as you and I were talking about, we're not going to solve all the problems with our little amount of money. I mean, one of the heart-wrenching things I've noticed about this is how many people are reaching out and how people have done so much great work. I mean, the clothing drives and the food drives and the money, it's wonderful. But more importantly, as you and I said, it's about people wanting to feel empowered that they're doing something. It's not the amount. It's the fact that they're doing it because it makes them feel good.
Yes.
And they would hope that somebody would do it in return for them sometime.
I agree. You know, on the first half of the show, I had Drew Coven from L.A. Strong Foundation, and they're doing extraordinary work. And just, you know, they are looking for volunteers and more supplies. And you know, it's so, I was saying, you could just go in your house and look around and see, what could I donate that I don't need? I really ask yourself, do I really need this stuff? I mean, and give it away and go help someone.
It's so interesting that you say that, because some of the testimony from these people, if they're in a good place, not the people that have literally nothing else and they have nowhere to go, they're not in a position to be this thoughtful about it. But people say these circumstances teach you how little you need to be happy. I mean, we have our lives, we have our families, and it sort of edits your life very quickly for you, and you realize that you don't need everything that you think you need to be happy.
That's right. That's right. So tell me more about the show. What can people expect?
Okay. The name of this show is Unassisted Living. It's for people of a certain age. And that's why we have it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so people can be home by dark.
I saw that.
that's the demographic that I appeal to.
Okay.
But I just talk about the mystery, the agony, the joy of being a person of a certain age. I talk about being a grandparent, about my relationship with my grandchildren compared to my relationship with my grandparents, talking about just navigating your way through life, going to different doctors, having different procedures, trying to have a relationship at a certain age when you haven't had one for a long time. So it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, somebody called it a great baby boomer support group, which I think perfectly describes it. According to one review in a San Fernando Valley newspaper, it said Fritz Coleman is the voice of the Metamucil generation. So I'm very happy to be that person. Anyway, that's what you'll have at the show.
Okay.
I have a wonderful opening act. Her name is Wendy Liebman. She's one of the funniest and most personable comics working. She's open for Ray Charles and Bill Maher. She takes a Showtime special in the theater where we are called I'm Taller on TV. It's a great show. Last weekend show, we had my old friend Lawrence Juber, who was the leader of my band when I had a short-lived talk show on Channel 4. He was the lead guitarist for Paul McCartney and Wings.
Ooh.
He came and opened the show with an acoustic set that blew the roof off the place.
Whoa.
And then Wendy performed, and then I performed, and they have a nice show.
That's great.
And over and above the fires, Janine, and you know this because you do such great work on your show talking about this kind of thing. We're just in a place of divide and mm-hmm. darkness right now.
I know.
And I do no politics in my show at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a time when people need to be taken out of their heads for an hour and a half and just reminded of what we have in common.
Yes.
And not what separates us. And it's very therapeutic, we're finding. Some people have come back more than once, so we're
That's
very
great.
Happy
I'm not
that.
Surprised to hear that. So
yeah.
Here you retired as being a meteorologist for NBC years ago. Mm-hmm. Did you have it in your mind that you were going to do this?
Well, I don't know if I've told you this story, but I got my job doing weather from doing comedy.
I did not know
this. I was a staff performer at the Comedy Store.
Okay.
And I came out here in 1980 to pursue a career in stand-up comedy. I was in radio, but I started working in jazz clubs and stuff and became smitten by having a career in stand-up. So I just threw it all away and came out here and had a go at it. And I was working at the Comedy Store. And in 1982, my friend, who was an anchor person at Channel 4, John Beard, still one of my dearest friends, brought his boss and his boss's wife to see me do a show Friday night at the Comedy Store.
Okay.
And I talked on stage about starting my broadcasting career at Armed Forces Radio and Television. I was in the Navy for 4 years, and I did radio and TV. And while I was in the Navy, I was forced to do the weather against my will. I didn't want to do it. I knew nothing about it.
Against your will.
And I told a couple of anecdotes about this during my act. So after the show's over, I go backstage to meet John and his boss and his boss's wife. His boss was the news director at Channel 4 in Los Angeles. And he said, "This is a very odd question, but do you have any desire to come to Channel 4, do some vacation relief, fill-in work for me during the weather? I need a utility guy, a guy who can fill in on vacations." And I was making $25 a night at the Comedy Store. I almost passed out.
Yeah.
I said, "Of course. When do you want me to start?" He said, "Well, you have to audition." So I auditioned the next week. I got the vacation relief job. I did that for 2 years. And then the predecessor of the main weather job left to go to CBS. And I was bumped up.
Wow.
And I worked there for 40 years.
Phew.
I always tell people it's the greatest stroke of luck in show business since that woman was discovered at Schwab's Pharmacy in Hollywood.
Oof.
I'm so very lucky. So my life started with comedy and ended in weather. But I was able to combine the two. And I had two children. Doing the road for a comedian is brutal. And you make no money unless you're a star. And I certainly wasn't a star. And I had two kids. And so this weather job presented itself. And I gave my children a stable life. And it was, I honestly, and the older I get, the more grateful I am for all the astonishing opportunities and good fate I've had.
That's wonderful. It sounds like having a background in comedy, being able to think, you know, just improv, was a great foundation for your job.
That's a great observation, because there's nothing that could happen on TV that I hadn't seen in nightclubs at 1 a.m. to drunks. So when we'd have a computer problem or something would go amiss, which it always did, I love tap dancing my way out of it. And also you can react to what's going on around you and throw out a line or something, appropriately so.
Mm-hmm.
People said, "Well, you sit and write jokes for the news?" And I said, "No, you can't come out of a story about a drive-by shooting and then try to be funny. You have to have a sense of what is the flavor of the news at that moment."
Yes.
And if you're able to do that, you can navigate it easily.
Yes. I also, I tell people if you're interviewing someone, don't think of it as an interview. Think of it as a conversation, and that to be open, don't over-prepare, and to be open. So if you were talking about, you know, your grandmother and it was a great story, I'm not going to negate it. I might want to explore that, right? So to not be so stuck.
Well, no, you do that very well. You're gentle and inquisitive, and it's that makes a very nice interview. No, that you're 100% right. All the great interviewers, like Charlie Rose, who's not on the air anymore, all do that. They just they take something out of the conversation and then go down another road that maybe they hadn't expected to, and that makes a great interview.
Yes. I met Larry King years ago at an event. It was a like a gala before the Oscars, and I was the only one to get into the green room and do an interview. And we started talking, and I know he'd had some health issues, and I said to him, "What's the one thing you miss since, you know, your heart operation?" He says, "Lemon meringue pie." And it was though so cute the way he said it, and I thought, I don't need to like worry about what I'm going to ask him. We're just having a conversation. Just enjoy
it. You know, he never prepared for interviews.
Oh,
if he had an author of a book on, you know, his staff would write him a little bullet point sheet, but he never read the material. He just wanted the conversation to be very organic.
Yes.
And he prided himself in that.
Yes, that's what I always sense when I watched him, and even when I spoke to him. That's how you have the best conversation.
I agree.
Yeah. So tell me what this whole next chapter in your life has meant to you, that, you know, as far as giving you greater meaning and purpose.
It's been I had a very serious fear before I retired because...
Really?
I watched my father retire, and my father was the classic post-World War II type A businessman, where his whole identity was his work. I mean, he would go to work for 12 hours a day. He didn't care about movies. He didn't read books. He would watch a minimal amount of television, the news and Wheel of Fortune, and then go to bed. But he had no outside interests. He wasn't involved in nonprofits. Once in a while he was, but he didn't care about cultural stuff or, you know, he wasn't inquisitive about anything. And when he retired, I just watched him over a period. This is a very slow process, but he just imploded.
Yes.
To the point where, and when he got too old to do yard work, which was his only exercise, he sort of unofficially gave up on his life and just stayed in the house and watched TV. And it was awful. I worried that I would continue that pattern. Well, I'm telling you that my life is 180 degrees different from that.
Mm-hmm.
I make this statement during my show and then I give examples, but I've never been happier in my life than I am right now. I'm around for my grandchildren, even more than I was around for my children, because I did the 11 o'clock news at night, which is the greatest speed bump to a social life ever invented. And I'm just happy. I'm on the board of three nonprofits. I'm performing all over the place. This Saturday night, I'll be in Mission Viejo doing a fundraiser. I see my grandchildren almost every weekend. I'm in a really peaceful place in my life right now, and I'm very thankful to be able to say
that's
that.
Beautiful. You know, and that's a great testament to creating a life that is intergenerational, that has purpose and meaning. You know, you're physically active, you're mentally active, you're connected, because when we're disconnected from people, that's a recipe for loneliness and depression.
100%. And I blame social media for part of that, but I'm not as active on social media as some people would like me to be. But no, I'm engaged. That's another thing. That's a great point to bring up. I can say that I was a workaholic when I was employed.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pay attention to my friendships as much as I should have. I didn't nurture my friendships. I didn't go out of my way to set up dinners with people I hadn't seen in a while, or, you know, engage just in a phone conversation, because I was just so, I thought my job was so important. And then when I retired, I saw the importance of having a circle of friends that you can count on, because it keeps you engaged and it keeps you feeling like a human being. So I've done that too. I'm proud of myself. I didn't used to be. I'm an only child. I've been a loner all my life. But I've gotten to a point where I really understand the value of having a circle of love around that you can count on when you need them. I look at these people in the fires, and the one thing they have in common is community. They're neighbors. They're concerned about their neighbors, their families. It's really unbelievable.
Yes. Well, you know, you mentioned social media. Gen Z, young people, especially, you know, here we're at UC Irvine, they are experiencing this epidemic of loneliness. And a lot of it is are the devices, you know. So if you tend to feel more comfortable on your phone, and they call it doom scrolling, that's not good for you, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally.
I agree with that 100%. It's, you know, the classic, it's almost a cliche now when you see a family in a restaurant sitting around and there are four people at a table, two each facing each other, and nobody's talking to one another. They're all on their phone.
That's
the parents, the kids, everybody's on their phone. They're not having a conversation.
Right.
It's really changing the fabric of society and how we relate to one another.
Yes. Yes. And I was just saying to, in the first half of the show, we were already in a mental health crisis. I was on your podcast a while ago. I got to share this. We were already in a mental health crisis before COVID, and then COVID made it worse. And then you add in this mix of these horrific fires. It's even more important to be connected on a human level.
Yes. I think that and the division of thoughts in the United States.
Yes.
This chasm between people of political mind and, and how people are, even in their own families, these great separations where people are, you know, they're canceling Thanksgiving dinners because some uncle is so dyed in the wool of a certain party that he ruins the conversation. We're just in a weird place.
Very
where
weird.
We're separating instead of becoming enjoined, which we ought to do.
Yes, I agree. I agree. So anything else you'd like people to know about your upcoming shows? The next one is February 23rd.
Yes. I am just so thankful. I always enjoy my conversations with you because your head is always in the right place.
Thank you.
I would just direct people. I'd love to have them come to the show. And if they register for what's left of February and all of March, March 30th, 100% of the profits will go to the Wildfire Recovery Fund. You can go to El Portal Theater.com. It's ELPORTAL, and theater is spelled the formal way, theatre.com, and the tickets are right there. We would love to see you, and I'd love to meet you, and thank you very much.
That would be wonderful. And the theater, I just want to tell people, is in North Hollywood. I put the address.
North Hollywood on Lancashire Boulevard.
Yes.
It's right across the street from the Lamley Theater.
Okay.
It's a beautiful old theater. It started in the 1920s as a vaudeville house. Bob Hope and Red Buttons performed there in vaudeville. Then it became a movie palace. And now I'm working at the smaller theater inside called the Marilyn Monroe Forum. It's 100 seats. And they named it that because Marilyn Monroe went to elementary school right next door.
Aww.
At the North Hollywood Elementary School. So I love theaters with history, and this one has a lot.
Oh, that's great. And so, again, the website is El Portal Theater, spelled RE.com. And I put the phone number to get tickets is on the website. And if you, I'll reach out to your publicist, Lori, and get the updated graphic. I've got this one from January 26th, but all the updated information is on the show.
We have a new one. Thank you. So I just appreciate so much you allowing me to talk about it. Thanks, Janine.
Anytime, Fritz. I always enjoy having you on.
Me too. Have a great day. Thank
you. You too. Be well. Bye-bye. All right. That was Fritz Coleman wrapping up the second half of the show. He was talking about his residency that continues at the El Portal Monroe Forum. It's a special performance to benefit California Community Foundation Wildfire Recovery Fund. If you head to the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org, all the information is on there for all the upcoming shows, how to get tickets. And if you're not familiar with Fritz, what a career. He was an Emmy Award-winning weatherman and newscaster for NBC. He received honorary mayor designation of Toluca Lake. He's had careers as an actor, writer, and comedian, and so much more. You can learn more on the show blog. If you want to find out more about KUCI, you can head over to kuci.org. We have our entire schedule of programs, music, and public affairs. And you can follow us on our socials, KUCI FM. If you want to find out about being a guest on my show, send me an email to Janene, J-A-N-E-A-N-E, at KUCI.org. If you missed any part of today's show, we'll be up as a podcast. The first half of the show, if you missed Drew Coven from the L.A. Strong Foundation, will be up within an hour, followed by Fritz Coleman. Again, the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Coming up at the top of the hour is Pass Forward with SoCal New Waver, which is a great show if you haven't listened before. That's a wrap for me. We'll listen to a little music. And again, if you visit the show blog, you'll learn more about the various organizations like LA Strong Foundation who are helping people in need. There's another one, LA Missions February 1st event called Race to Feed, the Altadena Wildfire Relief Distribution Event. They do need volunteers for that as well. I put up some posts from their social media. You can head over to Los Angeles Mission on their Instagram to find out more. Again, that's February 1st. They need volunteers to help with meals, aid, and support. There's a whole list of items they need. They are serving hot meals and meal boxes for families. Emergency medical services are provided, mobile laundry services, hygiene, essential supplies, financial assistance, new toys and clothing, transit access passes, tap cards, and legal services. Again, that event is February 1st from 11 a.m. to 4. All that information is on the show blog, or you can head over to LA Mission on their Instagram. If you want to find out more about them, you can visit lamission.net. Okay, that's a wrap for me. I'm Janene. You've been listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Have a great week. I'll be back next week.